اللذاني علي وحسين وحسن لي علي وحسين وحسن حب آل البيت فرض عندنا حب آل البيت فرض عندنا وبهذا الحب لنا شميحا
Ministry
On the eve of Quds Day 2021, which falls on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan, Al-Quds appears on the cusp of an important transformation that will break the stagnation that has hit the Palestinian revolutionary street since the start of the corona pandemic. As the Israeli incursions into the Al-Aqsa Mosque intensifies, with Jewish extremists taking the lead in those incursions, with increasing numbers reaching hundreds a week, sparks Palestinian protests and marches ignited the streets of Old Jerusalem since the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan. However, the peak was last week's mobilization of illegal colonial settlers aiming to break the Palestinian youth gathering during nighttime at Bab al-Amud, one of the main gates of the old city of Jerusalem. As a result, the Palestinian youths exploded in a majestic scene to a point that the settlers, who were armed to their teeth, could not hold in the face of Palestinian anger. Even the attempt to close the mosque in front of the worshippers failed, as more than 70,000 native Palestinians showed up to attend prayers at Al-Aqsa Mosque. Those who could not reach the mosque surrounded the old city with prayers in front of the Israeli occupation soldiers. Things could not look worse for the occupation as we approach the International Al-Quds Day later this week. Israel fears this day every year as people around the world, Muslims and non-Muslims, come together to demonstrate their support for the oppressed Palestinians who have been living under the Israeli occupation for 73 years. Imam Khomeini, the founder and late leader of the Islamic Republic of Iran, marked International Al-Quds Day in 1979, aiming to keep Al-Quds in the hearts and minds of all Muslims worldwide who march to proclaim their support of the free nation of Palestine. 42 years later, Al-Quds remains steadfast as it was on the first day the British forces accompanied Zionist extremist mercenaries to occupy the holy Arabian city. Whether through massive rallies inside the occupied city, defensive retaliatory missiles from Gaza in support of their Jerusalemite brothers, or acts of boycott by the rest of the world, Al-Quds Day unites us all for the sole purpose of liberating Palestine. Welcome to the Middle East Stream, I'm Mara Osman. Al-Quds Day is not a day to celebrate a city in occupied Palestine. It is the last Friday in the holy month of Ramadan launched by the leader of the revolution, Ayatollah Ruhollah Khomeini, to reiterate that the issue of Al-Quds Sharif is the core of the Palestinian cause. It is a day for every free soul to acknowledge that the only just solution for the perpetual conflict between Arabs and the Zionist illegal Israel is the ending of the occupation and the return of the city of Al-Quds to Palestinian sovereignty as the capital of the state of Palestine. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Omar Nashabi, political writer and commentator. Thank you for being with us, Dr. Nashabi. Now, International Quds Day is seen as the legacy of the late founder of the Islamic Republic of Iran, Imam Ruhollah Khomeini, back in 1997, shortly after leading an Islamic revolution which toppled the Shah of Iran. He named the last Friday of Ramadan as the International Al-Quds Day. How do you think Palestine has benefited from this day?
Well, thank you very much for having me on the show, and Ramadan Kareem. Yes, I think that, the fact that the last Friday of this holy month of Ramadan is proclaimed by Imam Khomeini as Quds Day is a reminder to the whole world of the this just cause of the Palestinian people to get back what belongs to them. And it is against this violation of fundamental rights and principles, you know. And this is a call where that keeps the cause alive at a time when the whole world is turning its back on Palestine. So this is a holy month for all Muslims and all Arabs and all people concerned with this issue. This wasn't a call for a specific group. It was a call for international solidarity with the Palestinian people in their struggle for basic rights and in facing Israel that has violated so many of the international laws and so many of the international resolutions that are about the basic rights of Palestinians.
And you think they have benefited from this day so far?
Yes, definitely, because it has brought back every time of the year on the last Friday of Ramadan, Muslims all over the world, you know, get together to actually call for justice in Palestine, and that is an international coalition or an international solidarity that is essential to keep this cause alive in order to bring justice to the people of Palestine and to Muslims all around the world. This is the Jerusalem Al-Quds is a holy place for all Muslims and Christians all around the world. And that is why to actually talk about it and come together at this time of the year, at the time, at this month, this holy month when the Quran came from the angel to the Prophet Muhammad, you know, is an important time for all Muslims everywhere.
Well, Dr. Nashabi, in recent weeks, we did see that the Israeli occupation forces increase their aggression against the native Palestinians, especially in occupied Al-Quds, where we saw a lot of protests from the Palestinians against the Israelis. But also we saw a lot of settler provocations, chanting death to Arabs and other provocative chants. How do you assess the silence of the international community, on top of which is the United Nations silence on such incremental genocide against the native Palestinians?
Well, I think the settlers and the Israeli regime and the Zionists are profiting from the fact that there is an international crisis currently with Corona, with economic difficulties. The United Nations is preoccupied with other issues that are issues of basic health, with the spread of the virus and how to secure the vaccine. The Arab world is preoccupied with the issues of, after the Emirates signed this agreement with the Israelis, they are going to naturalization of relations with Israel. So I think the actual settlers and the Zionists have profited from this regional situation and international situation to increase their attacks on Palestinians and expand their occupation of neighborhoods inside East Jerusalem. And this is what they have been doing. They have been throwing families, Palestinian families, out of their homes, out of their neighborhoods, and they've been taking their homes. And everybody can see that in the social media and in the media coverage, despite the fact that the media coverage is limited, but no one is doing anything about it. And that will encourage them to actually increase their occupation.
Well, to make things just worse, we had the occupation forces pave the way for the extremist far-right Jews to stage the anti-Arab marches that I told you about. But there's something that's very important that happened in Al-Quds, in occupied Al-Quds, and then we saw some certain factor of retaliation coming from Gaza at the same time. Gaza started retaliatory attacks to try and also support their brothers in Jerusalem. What are your current prospects toward an ignition of another intifada if this just continues? We have Sheikh Jarrah, we have the Al-Quds protests, we have Gaza.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have a feeling that there are elements within the Palestinian Authority that are acting as agents for some Arab states and some Arab nations that have signed a deal with Israel. And their function and their job is to put down any Palestinian sentiment and the organization to actually launch a new intifada. However, the Palestinian people and the violation of their basic right cannot stop them from rebelling against this oppression. And I think that, and I hope that the Palestinian people in the West Bank and in Gaza will reunite their efforts, and they will take to the streets again, because there are things that are unbearable. I mean, even if you actually do whatever effort to stop the people from saying no to occupation, you will not be successful, despite the fact that, for example, the elections have been taken to another date, they have been postponed, and that is really not to the benefit of the Palestinians. The Palestinian people, I think, are feeling that they are alone in this struggle, mm-hmm. and they are moving forward, and I think they are organizing their ranks. However, in some places, they are desperate. The whole world has abandoned them, except some nations like the Islamic Republic of Iran and Syria and Lebanon, mm-hmm. Whereas the rest of the world that used to, at least only in words in the past, the Arab League used to show solidarity with the Palestinian people. Now, it's not only, not even in words, there's no sign of any solidarity with these people. Here. They are left alone.
Exactly. This is how the Palestinians are feeling inside of the occupied Palestine or the occupied Palestinian territory. But this is the first year when we have Al-Quds Day, where we have also Arab normalization with the Israeli
yes.
entity. Everyone is turning a blind eye, just like you said, to the sufferings of the Palestinians, whether inside or outside. There are people outside who want to return to their ancestors' land, to their land. But
yes.
still, it's not possible because of this normalization
How do you think
this normalization yeah. would actually affect the essence of Al-Quds Day?
Yes, I want to add a remark that, some Arab states, they say that, their problem, they have a problem with the Islamic Republic of Iran. And they consider that their problem with the Islamic Republic of Iran will make them move away from the central issue that is Jerusalem. This is just a pretext for not doing their moral duties mm-hmm. to stand by the Palestinians. They take a pretext that, yes, that the Islamic Republic of Iran is holding the cause of Palestine as a primary cause. Hence, they do not want to actually take that cause into consideration. That is a ridiculous justification for their continuous treason of the central issue that is the Palestinian issue. That is the violation of Palestinian and Arab, Islamic, and Christian rights mm-hmm. in Palestine. And that has been going on for a long time. And
but
now it has culminated with this naturalization.
Yeah,
I think the last Friday of the month of Ramadan mm-hmm. is an opportunity for all Arabs and all Muslims and all people around the world to show that the issue of Palestine is an issue of basic right. It has
Definitely.
Nothing
this is
to
what
do with the interests
Dr. Nashabi
of,
are
yeah.
doing and continue to do, despite the fact that they are suffering, and their sufferings might not be heard by a lot of Arab states, but they continue with the resistance, and that's the most important factor
exactly.
to liberate, hopefully, Palestine. Thank you very much for being with
Thank
us
you.
To discuss the upcoming International Al-Quds Day. Dr. Omar Nashabi, political writer and commentator from Beirut. Please stay tuned. We will be talking next about the upcoming liberation of Maghreb.
This is Midstream, and here is IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, in this weekly program, Marwa Osman discusses two important issues related to West Asia region with two political analysts. Midstream is with you every Friday on IRIB English Radio.
The Yemeni armed forces and the popular committees continue their accelerated advance in the northern governorate of Ma'rib, where the U.S.-led Saudi coalition of aggression against Yemen is facing a major dilemma as a result of their failure to halt the advancement of the Yemeni resistance. Meanwhile, the death of a large number of leaders of the forces loyal to Abdurrabu Mansour Hadi during the past 2 weeks on the front lines of Ma'rib exacerbated inter-accusations of treason inside the Saudi Emirati coalition camp. More details in this following report. The former and current U.S. administration, in cooperation with Israel, the Saudi royal family, the UAE, Sudan, Turkey, and Daesh mercenaries, mobilized more than 30,000 armed men and supplied them with the latest weapons, and entrusted the Minister of Defense of Hadi and Saudi officers to lead the battle to keep Ma'rib under Saudi occupation. But why Ma'rib exactly? Ma'rib is important for its strategic location on the border with Saudi Arabia. It is an important water hub for Yemen and a large source of oil and gas income for Yemen. That is why we see the U.S.-led Saudi aggression pushing towards the Battle of Ma'rib. For its liberation means the first breath Yemen takes after 6 years of deliberate suffocation. Finalizing the Battle of Ma'rib could have been accomplished by the Yemeni resistance forces some time ago, but the quick control of Ma'rib would not have ended the roles of Saudi leaders and members of terrorist organizations in the governorate. They would have just fled to other governorates to continue their terrorist war on Yemen. This understanding of the slow progression in resolving the Battle of Ma'rib leads to a better evaluation of the special operations that the army forces and the joint committees have resorted to during the past week. The Yemeni armed forces and the resistance selected specific targets of importance, including gathering points of invaders and mercenary forces. Observers believe that the Yemeni resistance was able to implement its will due to innovation and strategic planning for the battle. Today, neither the Air Force is able to control the battle, nor the rush of many Al-Qaeda mercenaries to the front lines to provide a safe withdrawal of the Hadi forces. Meanwhile, Mohammed bin Salman's statements about ceasefire negotiations and the Arabism of Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi means that the Saudi army is in a state of defeat and fragmentation due to the grave losses in Ma'rib, as well as the inability of the Saudi army to at least defend the Saudi-Yemeni border. Mohammed bin Salman's embellished speeches about Arabism, Islam, and negotiations come from his media advisors who have so far proven their failure, whether in promoting his unjustified aggression against Yemen or in saving face by trying to end it. To discuss this issue with us from Beirut is Mr. Ali Murad, who's a political commentator. Thank you for being with us, Mr. Ali. Now, Ma'rib seems to have become a very important military shift in the balance of power between the U.S.-led Saudi aggression against Yemen and the Yemeni resistance, on the other hand, especially that U.S. efforts are underway to try and halt any progress for the Yemeni resistance and the armed forces. How do you perceive the recent developments on the ground in Ma'rib will change this balance of power?
Thank you for hosting me.
My pleasure.
Of course, Ma'rib is an important city, just not because it's close to Sana'a, but because it's the last stronghold of the U.S.-Saudi-led coalition waging its war on Yemen. Because if you take a look at the map, you will see that the northern Yemen. In northern Yemen, there is only Ma'rib kept to be liberated. So it's important for Sana'a, and it's important also for Saudi Arabia and also Al-Islah Party, because it's the stronghold for Al-Islah Party. There is also some important strategic facilities to the east of Ma'rib. You got the oil and gas facilities. So if Sana'a controls completely Ma'rib and puts its hand on the oil and gas facilities, then they will have more electricity, they will have more power, they will have some features and services to provide to the 20 million population in northern Yemen. That means that Saudi Arabia would not be able to use the paper of the shipments, the oil shipments, mm-hmm. and you know, all the gas and oil that is necessary for the lives of those 20 million Yemenis. So it's important for both sides. I believe that the Sana'a government wants to have full control on Ma'rib gradually, and not by all forces in, because they know there is a tribal situation in Maghrib that Ansarullah want to keep their relations with them in the coming future, because it's important for the future of Yemen. Mm-hmm. We are not talking about a completely military battle taking place in Maghrib. It's also a social and a political battle that Sana'a is winning so far.
You're saying that the Yemeni resistance basically wants to keep its relations up with the clans and the tribes and not have blood separate exactly. between them for the future of Yemen. But what is worth mentioning here is the recent death of the Director of Officers Affairs as well as the Director of the Military Judiciary Department in the so-called Hadi forces, in addition to the death of many other Saudi generals as well. In this strategic and military sense, how do you interpret the presence of first rank officers and generals at the front lines of Maghrib losing their lives under the command of Mohammed bin Salman's coalition of aggression?
Of course, Mohammed bin Salman is treating Maghrib as its last stronghold. Mm-hmm. If he loses Maghrib, then he will be declared as a loser in Yemen, a formal loser in Yemen. Because if you take a look to the south, actually, Saudi Arabia doesn't have any influence kept in the south.
So rather the UAE.
Yes, exactly, to the Emiratis, through their militias and the so-called, the elite brigades and the giants brigades. All those names, they are controlled by Abu Dhabi. And actually, Saudi Arabia doesn't have any influence and power in the south. If Maghrib is fallen into the hands of Ansarullah and the government in Sana'a, then Mohammed bin Salman has nothing kept to stand on in Yemen. So I think that he is desperate. That's why he is pushing his generals and also the generals of the so-called Yemeni army aligned to Abd Rabbu Mansur Hadi and Al-Islah Party. It's actually, it's a carnage. They are killing their generals for no purpose, actually, mm-hmm. because they know they are losing the ground and they are losing the tribes. And this is the most important thing than losing grounds.
And this is what actually the Yemeni resistance is investing in. They are investing in them losing the tribes,
yes.
and them, the Yemeni Sana'a government winning it. But let us discuss a bit the statement of Mohammed bin Salman that happened like a week ago. Saudi Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, where he considered Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi as a Yemeni and an Arab. Wallah, thank you very much. And that he wished to sit with him at the negotiations table. I personally read that as a clear Saudi defeat. How do you decipher Mohammed bin Salman's statements?
I agree with you completely, because if Mohammed bin Salman had won his battles on the ground, he wouldn't speak this way when talking about Sayyid Abdul Malik al-Houthi. Of course, because he is defeated, he is using this soft tone and he is offering talks and dialogue. I think his main purpose now is to stop the battle of Maghrib. He wants to reach an agreement, just like the agreement of Al-Hudaydah, which was signed in 2019 in Sweden. And by the way, the Saudi part didn't abide by the agreement. That's why they are trying to repeat the process by reaching an agreement for Maghrib, and they will not abide by in the future. But I think that Sana'a is aware about this scheme, and I think they are completely clear. They said from the end, no talks, no peace, unless you stop your air raids, your bombings, and also you lift the siege, which is more important, I think, than the all the military battles taking place.
So in order for that to happen, we just have less than a minute now. In order for that to happen, what do you think is a plausible and real option for everyone here in order to get rid at least of the humanitarian crisis and just break that blockade?
I think that the Americans, in the first place, they have to be straight. The Biden administration is beating about the bush. They are making games. Lender King is saying openly that his main purpose is to stop the Battle of Marib. They are using the humanitarian issue as a paper of war, as a means of war. So I think the United States and Saudi Arabia, they have to make their minds. Do they want to this war to proceed, mm-hmm. to continue? They claim that they want to end it, but on the grounds, the opposite is what we see.
Well, we have to wait and see then what happens, especially basically after the end of Ramadan, the holy month of Ramadan, because this is how things are being shown on the ground, that the Yemeni resistance might have something very important when Eid comes over. Thank you very much for being with us, Musa Ali Murad, political commentator, to discuss how the Yemeni resistance is fighting to liberate Ma'rib. Now, thank you for being with us, and please stay tuned next week for more from the Middle East Stream.
The month of Allah presents Ahkam, Islamic Commandments of Fasting by Hujjatul Islam Khakdaman.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajeem. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Hello and welcome to our programs. Greetings. Thank you so very much. This is Month of Allah and I am here with you. I'm very proud to have another opportunity to talk about the Ahkam regarding the month of Ramadan. Well, in this episode, I'm going to talk about recommended fasting. How good is it? And about the Ahkam that talk about them and some of the accounts from the Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, that talk about the virtue and about the benefits of recommended fasting. Now, a lot of days in the year are counted and are notified as the days which fasting is very recommended. You know, all of the years of the year, except those days that fasting is either makruh or haram, all of the days are good days to fast. But some of them are very special too. For example, the first day, the middle day, and the last day of every month. These 3 days have been mentioned to be very recommended to fast. Why? Special effects they have. If these 3 days in a month you fast, it means the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his household has said that if somebody fasts these 3 days in a month, all of the month is considered for him to be fasted in the eyes of God. So the first, the 15th day, and the last day of the month, if I fast, it means I have fasted all of the month. How valuable is it? For example, let me narrate a story here from Salman, the companion of Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, one of the very closest companions and followers of the Prophet. In a gathering, Holy Prophet and some of the companions of the Holy Prophet, they were sitting and they were talking. Holy Prophet said, "Who fasted all of the previous month?" Salman stood up, pointed his hand and said, "I fasted." Somebody in the gathering said, "No, you don't fast all of the days. I can see you in the middle of some days and you're eating, you're drinking." Salman said, "No, I believe the words of the Holy Prophet. Holy Prophet said, the first, the middle, and the last day of month, if you fast, it means all of the month. And I do fast these 3 days. And it means all of the month for me. In the eyes of God, I am a person who has fasted all of the days of the month." right? And the virtues, the benefits coming out of these recommended fasting. For example, Sha'ban, all of the Sha'ban. For example, Rajab, all of the month of Rajab. Both of them are very recommended and advised months to fast. The Rajab, Holy Prophet says that this is my month. Sha'ban, Holy Prophet said this is the month of my Ahlul Bayt, my legatees. Meaning that doing good in these 2 months means something more special, and they have more rewards for you. The other point to talk about here, about recommended fasting, something that is experienced a lot, is that it increases your endurance. It increases your tolerance. And tolerance, patience, endurance, these are the virtues in your life which help you the most and make you the best. And fasting is one of the ways, especially recommended fasting, because those fastings which are wajib, we cannot do anything about them. They are obligatory, we should do them. But these recommended fastings are those who we choose by our own decisions, and we show what kind of a person we want to be. We show that we want to be better, right? So I recommend a lot, because since I myself have seen a lot of benefits, I myself have seen a lot of virtues, not just in the words of Holy Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, but practically in my life, a lot of things changed when I started to have some recommended fasts, some days of Rajab, for example, or some days of Sha'ban. So don't lose it, grab onto it, stick with it, and see the results. Thank you so very much, and goodbye.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
A gunman opened fire at a birthday party in Colorado, killing 6 adults before killing himself, police said on Sunday, 9th of May. The shooting incident happened just after midnight on Sunday in a mobile home park on the east side of Colorado Springs, according to police. The article you're about to hear has been written by staff at the Associated Press news agency. The piece is titled Colorado Shooting, 7 Dead After Man Opens Fire at Birthday Party. Stay with us for more of the Associated Press article. A gunman opened fire at a birthday party in Colorado, killing 6 adults before killing himself, police said on Sunday, 9th of May. The shooting incident happened just after midnight on Sunday in a mobile home park on the east side of Colorado Springs, according to police. Police officers arrived at a trailer to find 6 dead adults and a man with serious injuries who died later at a hospital, the Colorado Spring Gazette reported. The suspected shooter was the boyfriend of a female victim at the birthday party, attended by friends, family, and children. He walked inside and opened fire before shooting himself, police said. The birthday party was for one of the people killed. Neighbor Jennifer Reyes told the Denver Post she woke to the sound of many gunshots. I thought it was a thunderstorm, Jennifer Reyes said. Then I started hearing sirens. Police brought children out of the trailer and put them into at least one patrol car, she said, adding that the children were crying hysterically. Authorities say the children who weren't hurt in the attack have been placed with relatives. Police on Sunday hadn't released identities of the shooter or the victims. Authorities say a motive for the shooting incident wasn't immediately known. My heart breaks for the families who have lost someone they love and for the children who have lost their parents, Colorado Springs Police Chief Vince Nisky said in a statement. It was Colorado's worst mass shooting incident since a gunman killed 10 people at a Boulder supermarket on 22nd of March this year. The tragic shooting in Colorado Springs is devastating, Colorado Governor Jared Polis said on Sunday, especially as many of us are spending the day celebrating the women in our lives who have made us the people we are today. Colorado Springs, a town with a population of 465,000, is Colorado's second biggest city after Denver. In March of this year, 10 people were killed in a shooting at a supermarket in Boulder, Colorado. In 2015, a man shot 3 people to death at random before dying in a shootout with police in Colorado Springs on Halloween. Less than a month later, a man killed 3 people, including a police officer, and injured 8 others in a shooting incident at a Planned Parenthood clinic in the city. Police officers responded shortly after midnight to a shooting incident at the Canterbury Mobile Home Park, where they found 6 adults dead and 1 man with serious injuries, the Colorado Springs police said. He was taken to hospital, where he died. The children who were in the home at the time were not injured and are staying with relatives, according to police. The police on Sunday were trying to determine a motive for the incident. The names of the victims and the gunmen will be released by El Paso County Coroner, according to the authorities. Colorado Governor Jared Polis said the shooting on Mother's Day was devastating, especially as many of us are spending the day celebrating the women in our lives who have made us the people we are today. Multiple lives were taken today by this terrible act of violence, he said. Families torn apart, and at a birthday party, no less. The Mobile Home Park, which is just west of the Colorado Springs Airport and about 6 miles southeast of the city's downtown, has a pool, a playground, and nearly 500 mobile home lots. Words fall short to describe the tragedy that took place this morning, Vince Nisky, the chief of the Colorado Springs Police Department, said in a statement. The statement added, "As a chief of police, as a husband and a father and a grandfather, as a member of this community, my heart breaks for the families who have lost someone they love and for the children who have lost their parents." Police Chief Nisky said that officers and investigators were left incredibly shaken. John Southers, a mayor of Colorado Springs, called the shooting incident a senseless act of violence.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
Axel Jawadi talks about the various keys of life and has brought about this book to be a companion for the very famous Mafatil Jiran, where one is a tool or the keys for paradise, and this book, of course, are the keys of life.
The Keys of Life, a program designed to tell you that what Islam gives you will help get you home with joy and faithfulness. So, well, listen to
The Keys of Life.
The world is a very, very big house. Many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up. We must unlock them all today. Throw all the keys away.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وآله الطاهرين. My name is Sheikh Zaid Al-Salami. A few years ago, I started the course of wanting to commentate on a very important book that I believe is something that would be useful for everyone who reads it, and that is the book Mafatih al-Hayat, written by Ayatollah al-Uzma al-Sheikh Jawadi Amuli. Alhamdulillah, we're making some good progress in reading from this book and sharing with you some of the vital points that Ayatollah Sheikh Jawadi Amuli makes, and inshallah we will all be able to benefit as much as we can. We're still on the topic of how a person deals with their kin, and at the moment we're talking about your immediate kin. So we spoke about parents, and now we're going to speak about children. The Islamic way of looking at children is they are like an amana. They have been entrusted to us. We need to make sure that we pay attention to their health, we pay attention to the environment that they are going to grow up in, we pay attention to their education, and we pay attention to their tarbiyah, to their upbringing. There are a lot of things that are also related to what we call child sex education, or sex education for children, or sexual welfare, if we could use that kind of expression, where, you know, we teach our children from a very young age what private parts mean and how you are not allowed to show or expose your private parts to anybody, even your own parents, even your own siblings. You can't. Of course, this is going to be something fundamental in a child's life, where he or she, they grow up and they know that absolutely nobody is allowed to see them naked or anything like that. So this is going to make them more aware of their rights as children, so that, God forbid, they don't have any kind of, for example, traumatizing incident by nastajiru billah, any kind of sexual offenses from other people. We also teach our children, alhamdulillah, that they should be sleeping separate. We also teach them that there are certain things that they need to start learning what to do from a young age, when they're 7, when they're 8, what puberty means, what awra means, what ghusl means, what wudu means, and all these other very positive things that are all a part of a child's welfare. Because we need to make sure that we are cautious of the state of being of our children, not only mentally, not only spiritually, but also morally. And, of course, it goes without saying, physically as well. And this is why there are many, many ahadith that we can read from Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam that say there are certain times where you should not copulate with your spouse for the sake of conception. Should you wish to conceive a child, then there are certain times for you to do so. Certain etiquette, certain mannerism, certain mustahabbat, stay away from makruhat, in order for the product of your conceiving turns out to be the best, with your child coming into this world healthy and all of the other good things that come about with it. Now, talking about health and things like that, we even have a hadith from Ahlul Bayt that speak about the sunnah of washing your children from Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa alihi. He said that you should always remember, اغسلوا صبيانكم من الغمري, wash your children from dirt. And then he explains the reasons why a person should always make sure that their child is clean, physically clean on the outside, that they're not dirty. You know, we've already spoken about the sunnah of khitan, of circumcision. In Islam, circumcision should be done on the 7th day after a boy's birth, the same day where aqiqah should be done as well, the slaughtering of a sheep. So here the hadith says, اختنوا أولادكم يوم السابع يطهروا. Circumcise your children on the 7th day and they will be pure. يطهروا. This could be spiritual purity, this could also be physical, material purity as well, because we know that circumcision is a very, very good, healthy thing to do. There are also the whole issue of keeping the quality of our children in the best form possible. And that's why I do recommend, my dear brothers and sisters, to read about what to do at the time of conception, when you want to conceive a child, you know, when you are there with your spouse, what should you be doing?
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatihul Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatihul Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. there are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Remember, mustahab to be on wudu. Remember, saying Bismillah, saying Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad, reading the specific ad'iyah during this time of copulation, and all these very, very good things for the sake of the child coming into this world, Mubarak, blessed, healthy, also free of any kind of shaitani influence. Remember that we also need to do other very recommended things, like adhan in the child's, the newborn's right ear, iqama in the left ear, and all these other very, very positive good things. What about issue of education and nurturing and upbringing? Ayatollah Jawadi Amuli mentions three very important points that Islam concentrates on as far as children are concerned. Number one is religious awareness. And this comes in teaching them about faith, about belief, about aqa'id, about theology, about akhlaq, about qira'atul Qur'an, which is the most important thing, qira'atul Qur'an, reciting of the Qur'an. The hadith says that when you teach your child Qur'an from a young age, Qur'an will become a part of their flesh and their blood and their body. Learning also about ahkam of halal and haram and ibadat and things like that. Number two, the adab of how to conduct yourself, your behavior, your social interaction, your talents. This is also something very, very important. And number three is, what are you able to do to become a confident person, to become someone who has a strong identity, someone who is able to defend themselves, someone who is able to contribute in a positive way. You know, when we're talking about these things, there's always going to be that level of understanding as to why is it that Islam, you know, really, really encourages having children and, you know, making sure that the children that we have, we focus on them. Walhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen, wa salatu wa salamu ala Sayyidina Muhammad wa alihi tahireen.
Driving past, walking fast to the field of dreams, hear the children's cries.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind. A momentary emotion, space spent in time. Memories fade like a dusty window pane, and you can't see your past no more. The only thing that remains is that feeling of warmth in your heart that will always be there, be there.
This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave, 41 meters, 7410 kilohertz for Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran, You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Badr 5, and via internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.